we're going to call this one that you live until you've completed your assignment. So sometimes when I feel that my life is in jeopardy or something's going to go down wrong, a lot of times I'll start kind of contending with the Lord on the fact that I must complete my assignment, so that I must live past this thing that's in front of me that thinks that I shouldn't live. And so a lot of times that's a way that I plead my case with the Lord, is that I must finish my assignment. Well, my feeling about completing my assignment is different than my coach's feeling on completing my assignment. There's two different ways of looking at it. So you're going to listen tonight and get out of this what it takes to truly complete your assignment and not just get old. Because this is a story of someone that you have to ask, did they just get old or did they get their assignment completed? So Acts 13:36 is the verse that I use that says, "For when David had served the purposes of God in his generation," that after he served the purposes of God in his generation. So what you're serving is the purposes of God, that you're made for a purpose, that you've got a reason you're here on earth. It would be smart not to die before you get that reason done. It would be smart to finish your assignments. And so in some ways, this is coming at it at two different ways. So the person we're going to use today is a man that we're going to start his conversation with God about his assignment at age 100. Now, it has been talked about in his life a lot more than that, but the point that I'm going to accentuate, the point that I'm going to look into, the point that caught my attention is something God talked to him about when he turned 100. Now, they said he could have been in his late 90s, but we're going to just round it off to 100. Most people agree that it's 100. So it's Joshua. And Joshua is a guy in training. We've talked about being in training and we've talked about having assignments. Who was he in training underneath? Moses. You're seeing these two generation leadership where you'll see that someone you'll start out and you'll learn a lot from that person. And Joshua was that guy. He did everything with Moses. So he got to live Moses' entire experience with these people. Only for God to say, they don't have what it takes. They're not bringing anything to the table. We shall let them all die, and then we'll start with a new generation. So Joshua got the privilege of living his entire life with Moses, and then he got to do his entire second part of his life with what God wanted him to do. So that's what happens when you start young. You get to live through all your parents' battles, the leadership's battles, and then you get to start your own second round. So there's fun things of seeing Joshua as a young man, Joshua as a worshiper, Joshua as a spy, Joshua as a leader. And with every assignment comes special words that are given to you. I just think in terms of the fact that you won't get an assignment unless God gives you some special promises, some personal promises for your assignment. So you see those in Joshua 1:7, and it's that one that we talk about, be strong, be courageous, be careful to obey all the law that my servant Moses gave you. Don't turn to the right or the left, and you're going to be successful everywhere you put your foot. So that is a special promise for Joshua's assignment. So I don't know about you, but that would make me think, everywhere I put my foot down, I just claim that territory for the Lord. When I'm praying, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, I'm praying, Lord, I thank you this turf right here that I'm walking on comes under your authority. So you see these special promises, and all your life you'll work with the promises given to you for your assignment. Like you'll bring them to pass. And those are just words that God's given you. My special words are things like, your mountains are not my mountains, saith the Lord. I'm so glad that what looks like a mountain to me does not look like anything but a pimple to the Lord. It's just little bitty to him when he looks down. Or he told me when I took over the radio, you know, it just seemed like a monstrosity to understand something I had no background in. He told me, the minute a problem heads towards you, I didn't know that was going to happen every day. Like it was just going to be a problem heading towards me like a missile. He said the answer will attack the problem. Or at least that's how I was seeing how he spoke it. It was like when the problem shoots towards me, the answer will shoot towards the problem. Like it's kind of like the Patriot missile system. You know, when the missile comes towards you, another missile comes and takes it out. And that's truly what happened to me. I didn't face that many problems that were just left in my hands unsolved, that an answer would attack the problem. So when God gives you an assignment, the beauty of it is you get prophetic words to go along with it. And so Joshua is getting his prophetic words. So when you start getting prophetic words, realize that's building you up for your assignment. And so he begins, you have his famous story of where he takes down Jericho and the walls come tumbling down and Rahab the prostitute is spared in there and there's a battle plan. In this, he's given a specific word about what he's supposed to do, and it's in the book of Deuteronomy, and it commands Israel to obey God. It says, when you go into the land, destroy all the inhabitants. Have no mercy. Make no covenant. Make no marriages. Do those sound alike to you? Have no mercy. Make no covenant. Make no marriages. So some people, I don't know why they thought that they could make no covenant and have no mercy, but still marry them, but they did. So anyway, this fulfilled the divine purpose to not have Israel be mingling in with the rest of the people there, that they can't mingle with the enemies. They have to be set apart to the Lord. And so God makes a promise to them, and he says, I'm going to drive the nations out before you. Now, if that's not a great statement, that God's going to drive the nations out before you, that's not hard to fight a battle if God's going to take care of the nations ahead of you. He's just going to drive them out. And he said he'll bring them down. So this is how Joshua starts his second part of his life. When he's in leadership, Moses is dead and Joshua is taken over. So he's being told that God's going to take care of all his problems and that the nations will just go out ahead of him. Now, I want you to look at this assignment in terms of the prophecies around it and say, did they come to pass? Look at the prophecies, because you need to look at your life in the same regard, because you're receiving prophecies. Did they come to pass? Okay, so we're going to start with Joshua 1:4, and it's the clear calling of Joshua. But in it is something that I want you to look at. This is actually going to be our beginning statement or introduction to understand what Joshua's assignment entailed. And he said, I have given you the land. And he said, this is the exact location and the size of the land that I've given you. Now, in modern terminology, how they would call this, they call it the Greater Israel. If you say that, there's a lot of people in Israel that will love you for it, and a lot of nations that will want to kill you if you use the words Greater Israel. It's referring to this verse. It's referring to what God told Abraham. Because let me tell you what this means. The land that God intended Israel to have is a lot bigger than what they currently have to this day. So when they're thinking about taking some of the land of Israel away, God is thinking in terms of they're not even on the land that I told them that was given to them. Are you understanding? So if you're going into Middle East peace talks, or you're working out something with all the enemies, if you bring up Greater Israel, those are fighting words. Because they're wanting to take away the little pieces that you already have. So let me tell you, your assignment and the promises that God has given you is bigger than a lifetime can even take in. The promises are bigger. You're sitting there wondering, I wonder if God's promises will come true. I wonder if God really means what he said. I wonder if these promises are, here it is. Paul said they're yes and amen. You're wondering about your promises, but I'm telling you, based on this, your promises are bigger than what you could even ever take in a lifetime. You're going to go to eternity with your promises not being completely claimed. So while people are arguing whether promises are for sure, do they relate to me, or these belong to me, I'm telling you, they're worrying about it on the wrong end. They're worrying about the promises of theologically, do these belong to me? I don't want to overstep my bounds. When God's looking at it, you're not doing enough. You're not receiving enough. You're not claiming enough. You're not making what I've told you enough. And in fact, it makes people mad today, and it will make people theologically mad if you even say this. But from everything I can read in the Bible, we're weighing in short. We're weighing in less than what God has promised you. You don't need to be considering how little you might be getting, or maybe that's not for me. You need to be considering how much you're failing God in, that he's told you that's yours, that you're not coming up with a plan, an assignment, a belief system to believe God and trust Him for what He says. And the number one thing that you have to have, a receiver. Most people cannot receive. So Joshua here is being given something, told something, promised something, and dare I say prophesied that this is the land that he'll get. Very specific. Look at the measurements. They're impressive. It starts in verse 2. Moses is dead. Now go in and get it. So you're going to start out with a battle. And there's so many battles that Joshua has. And this one is a lot of fun. I'm going to just let you look it up on your own. But it's in Joshua 11. And it shows you what battle was like for Joshua. Like, what did he have to do? Any given morning, he got up and what did he do? You know, some of you are like, well, give me specifics what I'm supposed to do. Well, you're going to have to ask the Lord. Like, Joshua had to get up and he had to do something specific every day. His specifics were taking people out. That was his specific. Some of you get mad that you don't have it written down and your job description tells you exactly what you're supposed to do. Dad told me never give a job description because he says, who in leadership does God ever give a job description to? I mean, does he ever tell you all that he expects you to do? Never. So why would you give people that are supposed to be helping you with the vision low expectations? You tell them anything is possible. You tell them, be happy I'm not Pharaoh, that I'm telling you, interpret my dream last night. Interpret it. If you don't interpret my dream, I'm going to kill you. And besides that, I can't remember what I dreamed. But you better know tomorrow what it is. I mean, that's the kind of craziness that you get around leadership.
Amen.
Amen. So here's the battle. And Joshua is against something that bothers the children of Israel a lot, is we're not really armed. And this particular group of people along the Mediterranean and up to Mount Hermon, they have chariots, iron chariots, and they have horses. Can you imagine fighting people that are rushing you with chariots and horses? Well, you can read Joshua 11. God expected him to go to battle with confidence that God was going to drive him out of his way. Oh, what a great morning. Another day of acquiring your inheritance. So they went out with their armies and they came up against Joshua and it didn't work for them. And what's interesting is these kings in this area had been hearing about what had happened to the other kings, so they made a great big group of kings to come out against Joshua. So this had been his life. This makes you understand Joshua. You understand what he was told to do. It's very different than what Moses did with him. I mean, he wasn't particularly trained in battle. In fact, they said, we're not even going to let those people that came out of Egypt even see a battle, because if they even see conflict, they'll turn around and run back to Egypt. You know the type of church people. We can't even let them know there's ever a conflict. Well, Joshua wasn't that generation. He is having to face conflict head on. In fact, he's making it. So with that, you see what his parameters are. And then Joshua 11:15 is very important. There's a piece in this scripture that tells about the battle. It says something very significant to you. He says he left nothing undone. Well, that's what you want said about you. Joshua 11:15, he left nothing undone. Listen to what it says. Of all that the Lord commanded Moses to do, he left nothing undone. So I title Joshua 11:15, that the first thing that I'm responsible for is my predecessor. The first thing I'm responsible for is finishing the work of the mantle that I carry. Everyone loves receiving a mantle from someone. But with the mantle comes some undone task. You know, some of y'all were there when that was prophesied over me that I would receive the mantle. But it didn't occur to me till kind of like two chapters later that there were some undone things with the mantle, that there was some unfinished business. So I really like this verse in 11:15 that it says Joshua left nothing undone from the person that he received the mantle from. So you've got to remember this when you're in training. You may have to finish what that person that's training you is starting. Just let the weight of that hit you. It's really unique how it's remarked. It's just said it. It just says it just so practically here. He didn't leave it undone. Just the way that the scripture reads, it just remarks upon this. Moses is in his grave, but Joshua is still finishing up. Very interesting. That's what he prayed for, long life for him. Okay, then you skip down three verses, Joshua 11:18, and it says, Joshua waged war a long time. Emphasis on the word long. It feels like you've been doing this all your life, right? When one attack lets up, another one starts. We can try to make a guess of what long means. The scholars are in debate at this, but I'm going to stick with 6 or 7 years that it took him to drive the Canaanites out. You can think of some of our wars, and you know, it makes the 6-day war of Israel look good compared to the 6-7 year war. Ask yourself how long the American Revolution took. So some say as short as 5, but when you do the math, it comes out usually to 6 or 7 years. That was what it took Joshua fighting for 6 or 7 years of his life. Some people say that Joshua could have done them quicker. But you ask yourself, why did the Lord let it take so long, or why did he lead them in kind of a long time? There's some reasons why. And part of it is, if it had happened quickly, do you think the children of Israel would have appreciated it? When people give you something and it's a big gift and you don't see any work involved, are you a good steward of it? That's why you get up and go to your classes in the morning, because you appreciate your mom's money, your dad's money, right? Because you appreciate things. Or do you have to make an investment in it before it means more to you? You know, it's kind of that easy come, easy go. And if the children of Israel had just gone in and they had had a conquest where they flat just did like some of these military armies do and completely take over an entire country, like they just mow them down. They literally take over the area. The question is, how would have the Israelites stewarded that? And did they steward it well even at this point? So you're contrasting Joshua's rapid campaigns that he had with more of a slower occupation. So if you think your life is going slow, it might be this reason. Gratitude, appreciation, investment. If your training's taking a long time, you don't have something right in your heart. Because very few people can take a quick inheritance and make something out of it. Very few people can receive a lot quickly and do it. This is a huge amount to steward. I remember when we were moving from one house to the other, and the second house that I had to receive, I was like, I'm not ready to receive a home like this. I made a joke every time I drove up to the house going, who pays the electrical bill on this? Because it was a lot to steward. And it takes you a while to take it all in. The Jews call it this, that they don't have a big enough soul. You know, I heard one of their Rosh Hashanah New Year's clips, and they have a song, and they said that they needed a bigger soul. And in some ways, you do need an expansion inside of yourself to say, I can steward this. So you might not be happy with what you have, but you may not be stewarding what you have well in order to go to the next level. So the longness, that's one reason that he said he had to fight a long time. So if you're leading people that don't appreciate things very well, you're going to be in the battle with them. Now, they may be blaming you that it's taking so long, but in many ways, it's because of them. They're not able yet to receive it. So that's something good to learn in training. Because I was talking to Steph, and I said, how come would we do something about the end of your life when people are in training? And she says, you need to know what you're being trained to do. You need to understand what the goal is. You need to understand where this is going. So the next thing that we move to is Joshua 11:21-22. This is so important. I look at these as they just rattle off the page. But what's so amazing about this is Joshua had to defeat the reason that the prior generation would not go into the land. There was one thing that the old folks said we can't do, and Joshua had to do. Do you know what that was? They spied out the land, and they thought they were so smart because they had done such good scouting. And they said, there's something in this land that you're not going to believe. There's people that are so big. If we did a comparison in size, we're about the size of a grasshopper to them. Joshua had to go and defeat the reason everyone else failed. The reason 1 million people were buried, or more, I'm not sure the number. The reason why the past generation is buried out in the wilderness is right here, and he's going to face it. So that's another thing that you'll conquer. You'll conquer problems that past generations not only didn't even attempt to conquer, it's the very reason they walked away from God's promises. It's the very reason they said, God, what you say is not true. We can't believe you that we can go into this land. We can't trust you for that. It's impossible, God. And it's just all in a day's duty for you. Those remaining Anakins, those giants have caused problems, facing what the 10 spies had given an evil report over. How many people died in the wilderness because they were afraid of this one thing? Well, Joshua fights it. And in your list of noble things you've done, it takes up at least two good scriptures, verse 21 and 22. You make it look easy. You fight battles and people think, that didn't even look hard at all. But many people have not gone into the promised land for that very reason. They don't want anything that looks bigger than them. Intimidating. In verse Joshua 11, 23, what a chapter this Joshua 11 is. It says, everything is accomplished on his part. And then look at this beautiful verse. And it says, so God gave him rest from war. Now, isn't that something? Joshua, right there in Joshua 11, he had done everything he's supposed to do, and God gave him rest from war. Look at that. I'm not lying. It's right there in there. Now it's done. It says, there's not failed not one word of the promise. He has seized possession of all five kingdoms, and now God has blessed him with rest. You fight hard enough, war long enough, and it'll cause peace to come. Beautiful word. Rest from war. You know, the only problem I have with this is Joshua 11, I thought it had 24 chapters. That's funny. Rest right in the middle. Well, maybe it's intermission time. Let's have a little bit more fun with the rest. Well, a little bit of an intermission because it's been a long war, remember? So in verse 24, Joshua tells you, come into my office. I want you to see something. Now, I don't know if you've been like how it is with me with older men. They invite me into their office. And there's a reason why they take me into their office. I go to Israel. Every general lets me see his office. In his office are all his honors. They hang on the wall. That's why men have offices. And very few people get to come in and look at those medals and those trophies that hang on the wall. Isn't that what it's all about? Yeah. It's this verse 24. It's what it's all about. Joshua takes you in. He says, come into my office. Verse 24, I've been victorious over. Well, let's not just round the number up and say 30. Let's tell it like it is. It's 31 kings. I've killed 31 kings. Look, it says verse 24, they counted. List it out. You know, maybe Joshua kept their heads up on the wall. Here's their heads, all behind the display case. Well, you laugh at that, but what did little boy David take to his tent? You remember? What did he take to his tent? I mean, we could have that picture hanging in the coffee house. Goliath and all his glory, the headless giant. He took the head to the tent. You just got to enjoy the Bible. I mean, the head was taken to the tent. So maybe I'm having a nice imagination. Maybe I'm a scholar and just don't know it. And I'm impressed that there's 31 heads in that office. But somehow he was showing you, I've taken down 31 kings. And when you start counting, you've reached a certain age in your life. You've reached a certain mentality when you start tallying up what you've done. Because when you're young, you're still counting. But when you get older, you start running the numbers. But I can say this about verse 24. This list is meant to impress. That's the purpose of the list. It's to impress you. How many other men can say that? I've taken down 31 kings and all. Still, it's interesting because it's still chapter 12. Now God shows up. You get rest from the war. You take down 31 kings. And God has something to say. What does he say? This is the title of the second part of the Bible study. Very much of the land remains to be possessed. You see it? Joshua 13, 1, 2, and 5. God notices Joshua's age. Joshua is 100. Joshua doesn't know how many years he has left. At 100, you don't know. Have you been watching some of those ladies that were 105 or 117? I think one of them was in France that got COVID. Or, you know, she was telling about what it was like in World War I, I think. I don't know. There were some really good little video clips. Well, this is Joshua. He's seen a lot. He didn't know this, but he has 10 more years left if he's 100. And God says to him in Joshua 13, 1, 2, and 5, you're very old. When God starts commenting on your age, it's a problem. And he's not doing it to help you go ahead and take one more foot and push you on into the grave. He's telling you there's still many cities left to be captured. And Joshua has named the kings, but God is naming the cities that are left. This isn't done, this isn't done, this isn't done, this isn't done. I'm just preparing you that at 100, God will visit you. Even when you've been busy, working, long war, done more than anyone else has done, God comes into your office. And he has a different counting system. I want you to think what you've done to this point. Number your kings. How many assignments have you completed? That's what it is. I've completed this many assignments in my life. I'm just letting you know. You need to get a rhythm and a pace built up. Joshua, you're old. There's still many cities left to be captured. I was thinking about my own life. And I've come up with this ideal. I think I'm going to outlast America. I think I'm going to be getting in on the action of whatever comes of our nation. Because it looks like I have a lot more strength than what we're looking like we have. There's a lot to be done. Our nation's in the same position. So in his own book, it would be nice to have your own book in the Bible. I know I have a book, Ruth. But Joshua has a book too. And in his own book, it tells his problem areas. That's what's so disturbing. It's in your book that it lists your problems. At least you'd think in your book it'd keep that out. Just let's keep to the 31 kings. So it's long and remain to do. So let's write this note down. Much of your personal promises is unattained, unoccupied, and unenjoyed. With the Lord, when he tells you, you've still got a lot more cities to do. Like I told you, this whole area was yours. It's not done. So during one of our whiteboard sessions, I asked my coach, tell me what you think about this. I mean, I should have asked the question, John, you know, but my curiosity, you know, I found my tribe over in Israel, but my curiosity drove me to the point to ask my coach, what do you think about this? That what more could Joshua give to the Lord? I mean, he started young. He didn't have his period of rebellion. He served Moses faithfully. You just don't see him messing up. His name is very similar to Jesus's, and they do a lot of parallels between that. You look at Joshua, and he's come to this age, and, you know, he's just clicked it all off. But yet now God's coming to him, telling him, you haven't completed it. So I decided to get the wisdom of my coach while I'm still in my youth, while I at this marker, and I said, what would you do? Without even thinking. This is what's so inspirational. I would say that it has to be prophetic, because how could someone do something that none of the scholars do here? How could someone do something that none of the commentaries say here? How could she just tell me what he should have done? And she told me he should have thought of the land as a whole. Don't take the land that you've been told or your assignment that God's told you to do and just handle it as it comes to you. Just doing what's set before you. She said, get a bold plan, map it out, take it as a whole that in your lifetime you're going to complete this. Draw you a map and say, this is what I'm going to complete. This is what God told me to complete, and this is what I'm going to complete. Then divide it out, section it off, and take it section by section. Took me a moment to process it. Wow. You take everything God has promised you, you create a plan, a strategy, and let me use different words. Find your face in the future and work backwards. Like, how about if Joshua had planned to be successful? How about if at age 100 was the year that he had kind of on his strategic workings? You know, the plans in a man's heart are a man's, but the fulfillment of it's the Lord's. But how about if he had it worked out where at 100 he was going to have it all done? he might have said, okay, you're showing a lot of leadership. Let's go here and do two at once. Let's take this section and work this way. You know, one thing I found is doing the hardest assignments first. But no, he did how most of us do. Whatever attacks me that day, I attack back. Terrible planning. It'll get you a good talking to at age 100. Even though you're very impressed with yourself and everyone else has you up there as a strong leader. So coaching says, take what you've been given to do and break it down into bite-sized pieces and start accomplishing it in a timely manner, or you're going to run out of decades. And if you're not making your assignments, then you need to get more of your delegation volunteers helping, because you must get under your feet what God's called you to do. That's why God has people that are assigned to you that are helping you. Interesting. It's nice to be told now. So, what does Joshua do? He didn't have that coaching. He didn't have that coach. So he decides, I'm going to not do the fighting right now, and I'm going to divide up the land, the inheritance, because it was told that I have to do it. And it's true. If he had said, here I am 100, and I'm going to just let them divide themselves up, guess what would have happened? Putting one tribe here and the other one here, and Joseph's son gets two portions. Look how that would have done it. So why stop fighting and divide? Once Israel had control over it as a whole, and he had given it this, there was no one that they were afraid of at this point. They had handles on the situation. They had made quite an expanse. So much so that everybody was like, we'd rather just settle down and start earning a living and quit fighting. So he makes it his task of dividing it among the tribes. But there was a very strategic move he made. The entire Mediterranean coast, which was possessed by the enemy, still in the hands of the enemy. And of course it would be. Have you seen the Mediterranean coast? Who would give up Haifa? Who would give up that port? You're not going to let go oceanfront property. And that's what we have here. This is some fine real estate. And the tribe that was wanting to inherit it was telling the tribes that had other pieces, y'all can't quit now. You've got to help us go get this. And so he kept it in the entire lot until the enemies were conquered and the fighting was done, because otherwise it would have never been accomplished. Genius. The individual Israelite tribes were now clearing the Canaanites out of these areas so they could fully enjoy the possession of their inheritance. And that's what they're doing by chapter 13 and 14. So they're starting to receive their inheritance without their fighting completed. Now, anybody who builds a house will tell you this. If you ever move in and start decorating, you'll never finish. And that's what's happening. So it's ironic. Now, what's unique about this, and we ought to just stop for a moment and appreciate this aspect, but Israel accepted these divisions of the land as being from God himself. And despite the Israelites' character, this is a commentary speaking, of never having been able to get along with any other nation in human history, these 12 tribes accepted the divisions, and as far as we've been able to determine, never even one time did they engage in quarrels, disagreements, or wars among themselves over the undisputed boundaries of their possession. Never any conflict. That's a miracle. At this point, God was making the point that there's still resistance needed to be done in the north, in the south, and westward where the Sidonians are. Now, at this point in training, if you're in the business of picking and choosing and not doing the hard assignments that we're talking about here, then I would say I'm perceiving this as in a mirror. I want you to write that down. I'm looking at this biblical passage as if it's a mirror of my own life. Because if I'm picking and choosing, deciding which assignment I'm going to do and which one I'm not, this is what you run into. And you've got to realize you've got to battle out the hard parts. You've got to face the hard pieces. You can't get into a life and just say, I'm only going to do what I like doing. You're looking in the mirror. This is a mirror. Remember, my dad said, when you don't have experience, look in the mirror, borrow it. This is what Joshua's getting at age 100. Look at it now. The picking and the choosing, I'm going to just run these down because it's Joshua chapter 15, 16, and 17. But they didn't drive out one set of people, the Jebusites. The sons of Judah could not drive out the people who had Jerusalem. No Jerusalem, no capital. Joshua didn't conquer it. The Canaanites in Gezer lived among Ephraim. they decided, we'll just keep these Canaanites. We can't seem to drive them out. We'll just make them forced laborers. They'll just be the workforce. The next group, the sons of Manasseh, couldn't take, what they could never take possession of was the cities. Then the sons of Joseph, they couldn't get the, listen to this, the Valley of Jezreel, which is where what battle's going to be fought. And that's because in the valleys, that's where they had all the iron chariots. The valleys, the plains, they couldn't get hold of Armageddon. Capital, Armageddon, the cities, a few little minor problems. One guy made this point, it's not always the most evil that we have to destroy or the most dangerous, but the small failures. They weren't the big ones that Joshua had failed to remove, but he failed to remove the excuses. That's what I wrote to myself. What he failed to remove were the excuses. It is said the walls of the enemy are more to be dreaded than the power of the enemy. The snake side of the devil is more dangerous to you than the lion side. The L-I-O-N, the lion. It's the walls of the devil that will give you the problems in life. But the people were tired of battle, and the Canaanites who they failed to destroy are going to give them a source of trouble for generation after generation after generation till present day. What you refuse to confront comes back to get you. They thought of these towns as insignificant. What is that incomplete conquest in your life? What is it that God's going to come to you and say, this is unfinished business. I gave it to you to do. No one else on earth. This is yours. Where we lost that complete victory vision, where you haven't let the coach give you a design where you can take the whole piece. Take yourself to the finish line. Partial victories, those things we have left undone, omitted. I like this word, touched once. Unconquered, that God has told us to do. So, this moves us to the practical, from the nuts and the bolts to the prophetic. Now I want to ask you prophetically, explain this to me. Dare we fall into the same trap, lest we fall into the same trap. God promised that Joshua would conquer the whole land, and it did not happen. So I'm contrasting the promise in your present state, the reality. Because what you've got to understand about prophecies is they must be contended for. The entire book of Judges is about what Joshua left undone. You want to know why Judges is in the Bible and they're constantly fighting? Because they're defending what they already had. That's Judges after Joshua. So what would cause one of your prophecies not to come about? I will drive them out. The Hebrew is very emphatic. It is I that will do it. Let me ask you a question. Let's get serious about it. Now I've gone from preaching to meddling. Because I have to ask myself, I'm basing my life on prophecies. But am I basing my life on prophecies because I'm coasting? Or am I basing my life on prophecies because I'm going to achieve it? Because prophecies can cause you to coast. The battle is the Lord's. Good. I won't wake up. I'll let him show up. This commentary guy wrote these words. One of my favorite guys. Old guy. I love the way he writes. I love his British way that he can describe the situation. And he wrote these words. And I want you to see what they do to you. It says, let Joshua be gathered to rest with honor and the thanks of the people for the good services he has done to them. Let him go to his rest. Let him have honor and thanks and be grateful for the good services he's done. And let the conquering of the skirts of the country be left for those who came after him. He said it was God. It's fine. Notice what he uses as his scriptural punch for this. As Joshua had entered into the labors of Moses, so let others enter into his. Sowing and reaping right here. This is getting good. So the prophecy, let it be. Go to be with your fathers. It's the same as Moses. You had to finish his mantle because sometimes I've argued that with Steph. I'm having to do this, so they should have to do it. So let's talk truth, results. The next generation was not going to continue to fight or expand. They were barely going to be able to defend what they had. Oh, they were going to play defensive the rest of their life. Who does that sound like? Do I hear any assignments that church people are doing? Give me the assignments. Defense at best. Can we keep our kid out of the bad movies? Why is your kid not writing the good ones? We think like Gentiles. We're dumbed down. So before we receive this beautiful word and say, okay, let's just thank Joshua and appreciate him. And, you know, God looks at it differently and he's talking to Joshua what he hadn't done. But let's just be thankful and let it be left for others, is it? Israel to this day has not possessed the whole promised land. False prophecy. Again, in a mirror. I dare to say that no believer ever takes all that God has promised him. Your push has to continue all your life. And those who have a gift for push, it's constantly being tried to be worn out. I wrote today, Carrie Underwood's words mean something to me. When going to the water, remember that? I'm all out of fight. The worst, most dangerous position I can be in is when I'm all out of fight. Because people let you use your fight because they don't have any of their own. Planning your fight, planning what you're going to do. Are you going to count on someone doing it after you? Someone? Oh, where's your trainee? I don't see him. Where's your assistant? Joshua, I don't see his. And another thing that bothers you are your mistakes, where you got tricked, where your discernment went down the tube. Joshua 9, remembering when you got really bad tricked with the Gibeonites. You don't tell about them. You don't have any plaque about them in your office. That's not a story you like to share. You don't use it in your Bible studies. Let's just leave this one out. These guys did a really good job. They come up to Joshua. He's told not to make any kind of covenant with anyone. Have no mercy. But these people came, and it was okay because of this issue. They came up. They gathered their old wineskins. They got the cracked and the broken ones. They put the old wineskins on the back of the animals. They put old pieces of cloth on their animals to look like they had traveled from far away. The men put on old sandals to their feet, and they wore old clothes. And then they did it really well. They used old bread that was dry and moldy. And then they came and said, we come from a long ways. We have traveled from a faraway country. We want to make a peace agreement with you. We've traveled from a long ways away. We are your servants. Verse 14. And the men of Israel wanted to know, are they telling the truth? It keeps saying that through it. The men of Israel wanted to know if they're telling the truth. So they tasted the bread, but they did not ask the Lord what they should do. Mistakes, failures. You teach on discernment, and then you're like, well, at least I made them slaves. That's what it says, verse 26. He didn't let anybody kill them. I made a covenant with them. They carried the water for the Israelites and for the altar of the Lord, whatever the Lord chose them to be. They stayed slaves till today, is what it says. This covenant was so strong that Saul got in a lot of trouble over this one. Saul broke this covenant, and he paid for it with 10 sons. But notice what Joshua did. There was not a city that made peace with the children of Israel except the Gibeonites. All others they took in battle. He made just one. So you worry that you're slipping. You worry that you're tired. You're worried you're making mistakes. You're worried you almost ran over someone with a forklift. You worry that you're going to do something to mess up the ministry. But it's not your mistakes. It's your coasting. I wrote a whole lesson on coasting. I've never asked y'all to listen to it because I wrote it for me. I gave it to y'all, but it's my lesson. John Duggan and I talk about it on long plane rides. Where are we coasting? Where are we slipping a little bit? You know, John, used to I could pull this down and believe for it. Angie, I know this renewed something in me, constantly helping each other not to coast. Let's say the best of us, the best of the believers, those that complete their assignments, make great initial spiritual strides in their lives, will hit a spiritual plateau. You'll hit a curriculum level. You won't want to go up one more notch. It's pain until you get past it. We camp out. It's where complacency starts settling over us, and we're no longer eager for the conquest. We're just happy to get up in the morning. We see new land and we don't get excited. We see an enemy and we don't think about how to defeat them. The spring in our step. You know, Jesus said there would be springs of water that comes out of our belly and wells. But the wells are capped off and the springs are now stagnant. The water that bubbled so deep in my soul that made me so excited because I was the one that had the assignment and I couldn't wait. There's one thing I have to push against. Coasting. Where you kick back in spiritual ease and resting upon the past victory. Conversation, it's always about the past. I don't know if I told you this story, but Yeah, there was a time I asked God and I had the sun stand still. I mean, the sun stood still until I finished killing my enemies. And I don't think you really got the whole message is why I'm repeating it. But not only did the sun stand still, the moon stood still. Have you done anything like that? Before you come talk to me, I want to know about you. You can hear Joshua. Let's talk about the sun standing still. God, just give me 2 more hours and I'll make it worth your time. I can kill a lot more. God's promises and blessings are past experiences. No new strategy. This is as far as I need to go. No more assignments for me. Beware, beware, beware. Don't take off the harness and don't take off the armor. Partial victories. How far you've come, how much you have to go. That's what balances it out. That's the seesaw. How far I've come, how far I've got to go. What have you only partially done that God has commanded you to do? You're about to leave the earth without finishing what God has called you to. This is a lot different than dickering with God over, please don't let me die in this plane wreck when I've got to preach in this city. And it's an entire look at your life. Joshua 23, they call it the last words of Joshua. What happens in between? I'll let you study between God coming to him and telling him, you got a lot left to do. He's done what he's going to do because 23 is his last words. It says the Lord gave Israel peace from their enemies around them. Many years had passed, and now Joshua grew very old. It's a long war, and you're old at 100, but you're very old at 110. And Joshua says to him, it's almost time for me to die. Verse 14, you know and you fully believe that the Lord has done great things for you. You know that he has not failed to keep any of his promises. Oh, so Joshua's making a commentary on how prophecy works. And he said, none of them failed. Every good promise that the Lord your God has made has come true. In the same way, his promises will come true. But notice how he makes this compound sentence. He promised that evil will come to you and that he will destroy you from this good land that he gave you. This will happen if you don't keep your agreement with the Lord your God. Have you noticed old farts, they just say it rude and rough. This will happen. Then they tell you a few secrets. Joshua 24:2. People like to tell secrets right before they die. They'll drop a bomb on you. Better watch them. You'll learn something about your ancestors you didn't want to know. My grandmother Ruth told me one of those secrets. She had been wanting to let it pop out for years. And we learn the striking fact of the generational curses, something that's never been told before in Scripture. When you start looking for this, you can't find it. This is where you know that Abraham's father, the reason he had to get away from old Terah, was he was an idolater. This is not found in the Genesis account. Believe me, I had looked. Joshua tells it. Your father, Abraham's father, was an idolater. And then he says something interesting. Your fathers are idolaters. Makes me wonder, is he meaning their fathers were with Terah, kind of came from the same place? Does he mean your fathers as in Abraham's your father, so it makes it that your fathers are idolaters? Or does it mean those people in the wilderness were sneaking things in their their saddlebags? Is there a little idolatry going on there? But Joshua's talking. I'm dealing with idolatry. You better get this generational curse out. Your fathers did it. Is that why you're going to be drawn to it? Is that why God has to erase every people group around you? Because you can't be near anyone without becoming like them. You don't influence them. You don't switch them to worship the one true God. They mess with you. What does the world do to you? This is what he's telling. And then he dies. Verse 29. And then the last thing that's done, you can't miss it. Verse 32. They take some bones and they bury them, but they're not Joshua's. Or at least that's not what we're talking about in 32. Whose bones are they going to bury? Joshua dies in 29, but in 32 they bury bones. How important are your bones? That's why I think that life is sacred, even to your bones. But they have a set of bones that they've drug out of Egypt. They've carried them around for 40 years in the wilderness. There was a prophetic word saying, don't let my bones stay in Egypt. And Joseph, the one who fed the children of Israel when they were starving, the prime minister to Pharaoh himself of Egypt, the great-great-grandson of Abraham, said, don't leave me in a pagan land. Bury my bones in the promised land. In other words, take all that I have and promise me you'll get to the promised land and put me there when you're there. and they take Joseph's bones that they've carried all the way. They didn't let them get stolen in all the fights. They've carried those bones on the back. And as Moses led them out of Egypt in accordance with the faith of Joshua taking them to this moment, that it says by faith in Hebrews 11, Joseph would not allow his bones to remain in Egypt, but they had to be buried in the promised land. They buried Joseph's bones. No Egypt left in those bones. They buried what should be buried as an act of faith. They conquered the assignment. They made the move of what Joseph did by faith in an offensive way. But I'm asking you, did they play defense from here on? Or do they have any offense in them? Amen.